Ningxiao have purchased a golf course in Scotland, and they started off with just a group of enthusiastic people that were golfers or had experience with the industry, and they've gone on now to actually own a, I think it's 18 hole golf course in Scotland.
Hello everyone, welcome to the 12th episode of Colors of Web3 and Entrepreneurship. My name is Lam. As usual, I'm your Web3 host today. And here today with me is Oisin, who is the CEO of Missio.ai. Oisin, would you like to give a quick intro about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. My name is Oisin. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Missio.ai. I've been in the space for 5 years now or so, 4 or 5 years. And very passionate about communities, very passionate about AI. Excited to chat about them today.
Nice. Can you maybe quickly give us a more detailed background about your upbringing, education, maybe professional work experience, like how it led you into Web3? You feel free to choose whatever timeline you think is appropriate. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So I originally have a background in business information systems. So I graduated from the University of Galway in Ireland, or the National University of Ireland, Galway. And I actually studied abroad in Pennsylvania in the US, which is actually what got me interested in Web3 and blockchain in the first place. I studied blockchain concepts in the University of Pennsylvania, or Lehigh, should I say. Really? And from there, I was, you know, extremely interested in the technical side of blockchain. And I actually got introduced to a friend of mine now, Dennis Liu, who had a very large currency that was focused, or community that was focused on cryptocurrency research and education. So that's how I kind of got started in the Web3 space.
Nice. And was this like, what year was this?
This would have been 2000.
Okay, it was 19. Okay. At that time, so were you mainly doing research? Were you coding? Were you actively maybe participate in the community? What did you do back then?
Yeah, of course. So after meeting Dennis, I had mainly participated on the biz dev side of things. So focus on building community, focus on business development, trying to essentially grow what was called BaconDAO at the time into a very large cryptocurrency education research platform. So we did all kinds of things. We had, you know, educational programs, multiple calls per week. We also did a bunch of private research. So we had hired, you know, private researchers that had come into the community to do technical analysis, to do fundamental analysis, to essentially look for, you know, promising projects in the Web3 space at the time, or more specifically, I think it was in the DeFi space. Eventually, we kind of moved into other areas of cryptocurrencies.
Interesting. So was BaconDAO more like a group focus on finding new opportunities in the Web3 space, maybe tokens, things like that?
Yeah, exactly. So we used to essentially have a group of 4 or 5 people, or 4 or 5 main contributors, as well as the 4 or 5 people on the core team that used to do constant research on promising projects across a bunch of verticals. But at the same time, because we were doing so much research, we also had learned a lot, and there was a lot of people coming in looking to, I think a lot of people came in looking to just make money at the time because it was a bull market, and they were looking for resources to do so, but we actually turned it into more of an education platform. So instead of just giving people, you know, the advice, or not the advice, but the content necessary that that would help them to, you know, maybe find better cryptocurrency gems, we actually taught them how to do it. So we ran classes on fundamental analysis, technical analysis. We had some more technical programs around smart contracts and stuff like that. It actually led to us building up quite a large community. I think it was around 20,000 at one stage, with, you know, a couple of hundred active contributors that were focused on learning how to find these things. So eventually you have, you know, a few hundred people that were doing research for nothing, because everyone mutually benefited, which is great.
That's a huge community, by the way. I think even building a community of 100 is already Difficult. Well, that's impressive how you guys build it. Yeah. And how did that so how did you transition, I guess, from that to your current role right now? What led to it?
Yeah, so I forgot to mention that in the University of or in Lehigh in Pennsylvania, I studied research a lot on the use of blockchain in real estate, in the automotive industry, as well as, you know, a few other different side projects. One that really took my fancy was the real estate side of things. So for people who had read my papers in, I was actually introduced to Scott Fitz, who was the founder of CityDAO at the time, because of this. So someone came along and said, hey, you're interested in real estate. I've seen some of your papers. You know, there's this guy who's just tweeted out that he wants to build a city at some point on the DAO. So of course, you know, I was very interested. I reached out to Scott. I joined the CityDAO Discord at the time. Then from there, we actually went on to build CityDAO, which was also a very large community, if you're familiar.
No, I think it's my first time hearing about CityDAO. What's CityDAO about? Is it about building a city?
So CityDAO is a DAO that's focused, or was focused, on decentralized asset ownership. So the goal was to build a Web3 city of the future originally. So what we did was we had a small group of people. We had a vision to build a city, which was, of course, first of all, bringing land on chain, with visions to bring real estate on chain and all sorts of assets on chain, with the collective vision of something larger. And we actually purchased our first land in, I think it was August of 2021, I think. So we purchased land in Wyoming, in Cody, Wyoming, which is, I think it was like 40 acres. And from there, we had, you know, notable people like Vitalik Buterin, Balaji Srinivasan, Brian Strong, a variety of other kind of notable figures, Mark Cuban, that joined the DAO, you know, purchased the Citizen NFT at the time. So yeah, from there, CityDAO kind of grew and grew into also an extremely large community that I think everyone was very ideologically aligned around the whole network state concept at the time. I think that was the buzzword that was going around.
Yeah, I see. So everyone is basically excited about building their own network state, right? And
that's definitely the case right now.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. I know there was a conference a few weeks ago with Balaji in, I think it was Berlin, around the network state concept. So yeah, CityDAO had kind of gone from a Web3 city to a network state to, you know, it went through a few iterations of the grand vision. And I think that was one of the reasons why it, you know, there has only been a, you know, certain number of milestones we've managed to reach for a number of reasons. But I think one of the reasons why it hasn't grown to the potential is because of the lack of a concrete mission. But yeah, that's CityDAO.
I see. Yeah. I feel like a lot of the DAOs that they may be building, yeah, it's quite hard. How do you, I mean, I guess they have to have some sort of governance structure, right? To make people work together, coordinate, work together, divide the task, right? Yeah, I guess it's one thing that might be challenging for a DAO. Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the things about CityDAO is that we started off as a core team. We started off as a small group of people that were making decisions. And very quickly, there was a lot of calls from the community saying, you know, this isn't actually a DAO. And they were right to a certain extent. I think at the time, they were right in the sense of, you know, what the stereotypical definition of a DAO is, which is a very large group of people that votes on things to make things happen. And we had calls from the community. Everyone said, you know, this isn't really a DAO. So we decided to branch out, create a charter, create an operating agreement that essentially said that anyone that holds a Citizen NFT is a member of this DAO. And we set it in quorums, we set in voter thresholds, stuff like that, in order to actually decide on the future of the DAO. I think that was definitely one of the issues, was that we decentralized very, very quickly. And we should have probably gone down the route of more progressive decentralization, so that we didn't, you know, we kind of shot ourselves in the foot a little bit later because we hadn't set a concrete vision. And then we, you know, allowed a extremely large group of people to try to come to consensus on that, which is, it's just quite difficult without leadership.
Yeah. I do think that, I think even with, Ethereum right now, right? I mean, even though it's technically most of the nodes and things are decentralized, but I do think that there's still a centralized figure, right? Vitalik Buterin. Yeah, I can't really imagine what will
Yeah,
happen tomorrow if he's like suddenly no longer the figurehead. Yeah.
I think I draw a similar comparison of Vitalik in Ethereum as someone like Sam Altman in OpenAI, if you've been following this stuff over the last few days. I think it's an interesting comparison. I
Yeah.
hadn't thought about until now. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the likes of Lido and these people, they hold huge amounts of stake in Ethereum. So quite a large amount of the network could be considered to be not as, decentralized as people think. But I think that's just a thing over time that's going to improve.
That's true. Before we deep dive into your current company, can you tell us what are your hobbies? What do you do for fun outside of Web3?
Yeah, of course. What I do for fun. So I moved to Lisbon recently, or a year ago now, actually. So
Okay.
I still consider myself a newbie here. But yeah, I play paddle a lot, which is similar to tennis. It's a fantastically fun sport that friends can play together, no matter what level they are. I do a lot of gym work, and yeah, I have a lot of little small side projects. Very interested in research. Very interested in the AI space. But yeah, I would say a couple of sports and gym, as well as a lot of different research and fun projects to me that people may not agree with, but
Yeah, I see. Awesome. Yeah, sounds like very, very well rounded. So, anyway, yeah, without further ado, let's go ahead and deep dive into your company. Feel free to share any screen presentation that you might have already.
yeah, let's do that. Can you see my screen?
Yes. Yeah. Very
Awesome.
clear.
Great. Yeah, so Missio has gone through a bunch of iterations. We're now calling ourselves the Ultimate Community OS. As you can see here on my screen, we have, saving community teams time on features, bugs, feedback, a variety of issues. Essentially, what we frame Missio as is it's the easiest and fastest way for community teams to find and act on insights within their community, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Interesting. How does this work? Yeah. Can you maybe give us a walkthrough how it works?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. So maybe a little bit of background first I can give you just to show you where the idea came from is
Sure.
obviously being part of BaconDAO is a very, very large community. CityDAO also a very, very large community. And a variety of other people that I've worked with in the past have had these, just very, very large communities. It's mainly in the Web3 space, but it's also present now more and more in the Web2 space. And the problem with CityDAO, or at least one of the problems, was that there was a lot of noise. There was a lot of opinions, and it was very difficult to come to consensus or create any sort of organizational alignment. So that's actually where Missio started off. It's like, okay, in these very large organizations like DAOs, how can we possibly kind of take a variety of groups' opinions and try to condense them and try to adjust visions or adjust proposals in order to essentially come to a more cohesive proposal for different parts of the organization? So if a DAO is to vote on a specific thing, like spending money on land, you always have a variety of different parties that have opinions. And how can you adjust that to suit as many people as possible, or to fit a all of these different camps? So this was where Missio originally started off. We were essentially taking in the opinions, surveying people, getting people's insight and feedback on different DAO proposals, in order to essentially take that information and graph it and get a better understanding of who the camps were. And then see what could be done with proposals to essentially make amendments. So if one group said that maybe it's too much, either we reduce the budget or we make justifications for why the budget should be that amount, and hopefully convince more people to be aligned. Or if people didn't agree with the team or they felt something was missing, then perhaps we would try to amend the proposal to add an extra person or remove someone that people didn't agree with. So this was where Missio originally started off. And we grew from there into a more comprehensive governance platform. So a way for DAOs to essentially give context to their members. So one of the largest problems in DAOs, or another one of the larger problems in DAOs, is voter apathy. as well as the missing context
Mm.
that people have on what they vote on. So a lot of people vote because someone asked them to, or because they just pops up on their screen and they'll vote with the crowd. So the idea of Missio then was to essentially bring context to voters. So if you're voting on an issue, we're going to give you the most context possible in order to make that decision, and then also help the organization to better understand how to create more organizational alignment inside of their DAO, if that all makes
I
sense.
see. Yeah, makes sense. So basically, it's like a tool to help DAOs, well, achieve well consensus as one, help them guide them to bring the vision into reality, right? Well, I guess one
Yeah,
way
so that's
is
so
how I understand
yeah,
it, but yeah.
exactly. So from there we kind of had worked we were working with a lot of DAOs at the time, and we were trying to find product market fit like any startup these days. And we found it incredibly difficult to sell to these organizations, because there is, while a lot of them are quite bureaucratic, there is no real you're selling to one person, whereas the people that are using the product, so the customer is one person, the users are another person. So it's quite difficult to portray the value proposition very well. So that's where we decided to pivot, or whatever you would call it, switch to actually building for a much larger market. So actually the problems that we were tackling were present on a larger scale across every community. There is a bunch of information overload. There is a lot of people that not go unsatisfied, but that are not necessarily heard. And there's a lot of issues, bugs, features, all kinds of stuff in many software communities are focused on now that is missed or neglected. So that's the goal of Missio, is to essentially put every single thing that a community team needs. So whether you're a community manager, product manager, support, QA, put everything that this community team needs into one comprehensive view that allows them to explore issues in more depth, create automations off of these issues, answer questions, log GitHub issues, a variety of different things. We call it that angle of it, the Missio Copilot.
I see. And for I think for those who may not be familiar with DAO, it's like decentralized autonomous organization. But actually, I would like to hear your take on like how is DAO different from regular companies or organization? Maybe you can share that.
Yeah, so I don't know if there's any one best way to answer this, but think that, yeah, so you have DAOs. DAOs are decentralized autonomous organizations. And the way that people currently have structured DAOs is there are very large groups of people that are ideologically aligned that come together to, solve some problem, or to, create something. I think traditional organizations, the difference is that traditional organizations are hierarchical. So you have your board, you have your CEO, and you have departments within that organization. DAOs follow a much more flat level structure, so it's much more democratic. Unfortunately, the problem with DAOs is that unless there's a very, very concrete mission, from what I've seen, they can't progress as fast as sort of. So they're very useful for specific things, but when it comes to, building something like Missio or building a product that you have to move fast in these markets, I'm not sure DAOs are as suitable.
I see. One thing, this is my personal observation. I've realized that DAO seems to be quite good at raising money, but like you said, it might not be so fast as moving like a startup and executing some problem. I just want to hear your take on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think DAOs were faster raising money in the last bull market. Now not so much. I don't think as much people are buying into DAOs as they were. CityDAO was a very,
I see.
very aspirational had a very aspirational vision to build this Web3 city that got people very excited. And that was one of the amazing things about it, is that you have a bunch of people that no matter where they are in the world, they are all very interested in a specific vision, or they're all very ideologically aligned, and they come together to form a group of people to achieve that goal. And that was what was very interesting about CityDAO. You had a bunch of other people like ConstitutionDAO, where people raised a absurd amount of money to buy a version of the US Constitution. Unfortunately, they didn't succeed.
Yeah.
But to give you an example of maybe someone who who has succeeded is Linksdow. Linksdow have purchased a golf course in Scotland, and they started off with just a group of enthusiastic
Really?
people that were golfers or had experience with the industry, and they've gone on now to actually own a, I think it's 18-hole golf course in Scotland. So there definitely is instances of people that were successful in their vision, and of course these people had raised money. Now I think people, I mean, given the market downturn or the current state of the markets, I think people are less likely to take risk on projects like this. So I haven't seen a lot of DAOs as of recent raise as much money as they were. But yes, it's true that they definitely were a good mechanism for collecting the funds to execute a vision.
That's quite fascinating. That's the first time I heard that someone pulled together to buy a golf course. So I'm kind of curious. I mean, feel free to share more information if you know. How does it work for them? Do they get to use a golf course? Do they like to get the revenue sharing on the golf course revenues? Or how does it work for the DAO members?
Yeah, so because it's so I'm not 100% sure, but there is definitely some very interesting concepts around revenue sharing. So if you hold a specific NFT that makes you a member, for example, in this case, I'm sure I think you get like you can maybe access the golf course for free for a certain amount of time, or maybe you get discounts if you hold something along those lines. So if you hold the Linksdow NFT, you get maybe discounts on the golf course or on merchandise, or maybe you get free guest pass and stuff like that. So this is really the true utility side of NFTs, which I think is really interesting. I think CityDAO had some similar visions, some similar projects along the way, where if you held an NFT, you might get access to a co-working space or specific VIP events. And the revenue sharing aspect is very interesting, but unfortunately, it kind of treads into securities law in the US. So I don't know if it's I don't know anyone who's even executed legally yet.
I see. Yeah. Whatever project run into a security issue, I think it's always a hinder the progress of the project. Yeah. Makes sense.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Can you yeah, maybe walk us through more about your project if you have it, how it works, a demo or something. Yeah, feel free to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I can show you this here. We've given the example of OpenAI because they have
Sure.
a very large community forum. So if I go forums,
Okay.
I'm not sure what OpenAI's is, but let me just get it for you. OpenAI developer forum. So all
Okay.
of these communities have a variety of platforms. So in OpenAI's case, they have a Discord, they have a Discourse, they have Twitter, of course.
Yeah.
They have a variety of different community platforms, and most of them look like this. So, you just have an abundance of different topics. These go on for, I think there's probably thousands at this stage of these topics that all contain a variety of issues. So in this case, this one's about assistance API pricing and token usage. And this forum goes on for, 73 messages. And there's probably other similar forms to this. And then there's maybe similar discussions on Twitter and maybe similar discussions on, Discord and GitHub issues and all of these kinds of things. So, there's just a lot of noise. And a lot of this stuff is useful. But there's also things like this where, this person has been nice enough to reference this other issue. But there's a lot of context missing from what people say. And it takes a long time for community teams to scroll through this and parse it into something useful. So what Missio's done is it's created a kind of all-in-one dashboard. So you can very easily, sorry, there's a little bit of a bug with this. Let me just do this smaller. But there's a cohesive view for you to be able to view any sorts of useful content in your community. So whether it's like someone giving feedback, people discussing a feature request. So in this case, someone suggesting a need for improving a My Files browser to adapt to various file types. And this could maybe be considered a bug as well. But feedback, different bugs, different questions that people might ask. So right now we're working on the extraction point part. So how can we extract all of the useful things that happen in your community and place them into a cohesive view for you to save time on scrolling issues and going through and trying to piece together context and trying to understand who people are, we do it all for you. So in this case, I can show you, we've grouped these into hierarchical topics. So here, have here is challenges related to GPT and DALL-E usage. I can go and see here's a bug. So discussing how the experience card rejection, that's by double checking their data is accurate. So I can open this. I'm not 100% sure what this is, so I can ask, can you give me more information on this? What is this about? And this will allow me to explore more about the specific issue. So the idea is this is the Missio Copilot. So if there's any sort of questions that a community manager has, instead of having to scroll through and try to understand things about this issue, they can just ask the Copilot. And this will take in context from other
I
bugs.
see.
It'll take in context from other topics. So everything related to this topic. It'll also create similar issues. So if there's actually any other similar insights to this, so I can, go through these and see if there's any similar bugs or if there's any GitHub issues that are already created or if there's any discussions anywhere else that are interesting. And yeah, so this is kind of the Missio Copilot, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. Yeah. Well, for this Missio Copilot, like how what's the engine behind it? What's I guess a machine learning model?
This is
How does
using just the latest OpenAI, the
I
GPT
see.
Assistance API.
GPT four.
GPT-4, yeah, exactly. So we actually experimented with a
Yeah,
variety of
okay.
models, both from like open source and fine-tuning our own. And OpenAI are nailing it with the performance, which is what we're focused on right now, is getting the most performant product possible.
I see.
We do want to reduce dependency on OpenAI in the future. Of course,
Yeah.
but for now, the cost and the performance benefits we get from using this is significant enough for us to keep using it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and I think it also makes sense for you if you want to, what is it, reduce the dependency, right? Because you don't know when some helmet might be fired again
Might
in
be gone
the
again.
future.
Yeah, we had this discussion yesterday. It was very fun. It's interesting how one man can affect a company's income so much. I don't think the board realized that either, which was interesting to see. But yeah, no, we will. These open source models are getting better and better. The ability to fine tune them is getting cheaper and cheaper, and also more performance. So, we don't see any issue with the direction we're going with OpenAI right now. The dependency is not that big. But we're continuing to explore a variety of options and make sure that we make the right decision for customers.
Awesome. I see. Yeah, so I see on the left side here you have like insights and analytics. What about the other tabs over there? Are
Yeah, of
they
course. So
functional yet?
we also have analytics. So the idea of analytics is right now there's other platforms like Orbit, and there's Common Room, and there's a bunch of platforms that focus on the analytics side of things in communities. So what we want to do is we want to allow people to be able to come in and use natural language to describe the type of things they want to see. So, right now we're working on the natural language chart creation, but I've created a few sample charts like member growth, platform activity, weekly questions. So by adding these charts or by using the custom chart creation, you can essentially describe the data you want to see. So I want to view, the member growth over time on a specific platform, or I want to view, the amount of questions that occurred last week, or if I want to, see a bunch of these different data points, I can essentially prompt these using natural language and be able to visualize them and save these for later so that they're an interactive chart, as you can see like here.
Impressive. So basically, you can just type in natural language and then it would give you the charts,
Exactly.
If I could show.
So I can say, I want to see a chart that is, there's an interesting one that someone said the last day. Like, I want to see a chart that tracks the time taken for, our community team to respond to issues. So tracking, as people's questions, and then the time between the people's questions and the time that someone responded to that question with the answer. So like different like things like this are not possible using the current systems. At least they are, but people aren't doing them. So we are kind of filling this gap and allowing people to do the most in-depth reporting and analytics on their community as possible. A lot of the feedback from people has been that the current platforms don't satisfy this requirement. You know, there's a lot of very interesting charts out there and a lot of ways to create these charts, but at the moment, it seems to be quite difficult for people to understand what is valuable to look at and what isn't. So we're giving them a way to easily query this and easily, see the data that's most important to them.
Nice. And for this, do you guys have like a back-end database? Like, is it a central database back-end to work with this, or
Yeah, exactly. So
for the data?
we're massive fans of Supabase. So Supabase just uses a Postgres
Okay.
database. So right now we're using a variety of different tools to anywhere from OpenAI to parse the natural language to Plotly and React charts to actually create the graphs and charts, as well as OpenAI functions to scan through the data. And yeah, the end result is we get charts that will look like this. These are obviously sample charts right now, but yeah, it's we're
Yeah.
very close to completing this feature.
Nice. Cool. And what about the rest of the tabs and any other things you want to share
Yeah, of
about the
course. We have
tabs?
a couple of other things. I think like the main, so I forgot to mention when you come into the platform, you will come in and connect your data sources. So first thing you do is connect your discourse,
Oh,
connect your
okay. So,
Discord.
okay, that makes sense. So customers, you have to supply their own data sources, right? Yeah, because
Exactly. So
I was wondering
customers
like
will go
where
in
you get
and
the data from.
they'll add the Discord bot, they'll add their GitHub, they'll connect their Twitter, Slack, any data sources that are relevant to them. And a lot of communities have a huge variety of these, which is what makes Missio so useful. And then this is how the data is collected. So we take this information, we scrape their sites, or we use the API from their sites, and then we can basically do the extraction pipeline for these insights. One of the things I was going to show you is the activity. So this is like basically all of the activity on a specific platform in one
Yeah.
cohesive view across platforms. So you can view your discourse activity, Discord, Slack, and basically anything that happens in any of these platforms is here. And what makes it really useful is this very powerful search we've created.
Yeah.
So I can search for something like Dali, and this should return if it is not super slow today. It's not returning anything great. Let's do functions. So yeah, you can see here that basically it's returning anything related to OpenAI functions. So if you go through here, you can see that there's
Okay.
a variety of different tasks that contain or content that contains things related to the search topic. We're aiming to make this more and more accurate, so it makes it very easy for people to find what they're looking for, especially community managers. So if they're looking for a specific
I see.
issue, on DALL-E or with a specific API endpoint, it makes it very easy to find all of the content that's relevant to them through this search. So we are still, optimizing to make this faster and faster, but I am on a local server right now, so it's a bit slower.
Cool. Yeah. So it sounds like basically with this tool, your Missio Copilot, they can just query just about anything, right? And it
Yeah,
will
so
compile all
we're
the data from different sources from what I've seen. Yeah.
exactly. So we compile all the data from different sources. We extract the most useful insights from them. And then we allow the community manager or community teams to essentially use the Missio Copilot to act on these insights, to explore more about these insights, to basically manage their whole community inside of one community OS.
Sounds like a very intuitive user interface, yeah, from what I can see here.
Thanks.
How many people working in your team right now?
Yeah, so right now it's just myself and my co-founder that are part of the core team. We do have like contract people that are working for us now, but we are looking to first couple of employees. So it's a difficult task hiring first people, but yeah, we're committed now to
No.
onboarding our first full stack developer in the next coming months. Trying to find
Nice.
someone that really brings value to the team that can help us grow to our grand vision, which is the ultimate community operating system.
Nice. Have you guys raised any funding yet for this, for your company?
We have not raised any funding yet. We are completely bootstrapped to date. We will be, exploring a strategic round in the near future, just because it allows us to grow a little bit faster. We're working with 20 plus communities right now to beta test the product, but once we've kind of passed the onboarding phase for these, we are expecting a plethora of bugs and feature requests, and in order for us to really scale up, we will likely be raising a small round to start with. Yeah, that's the goal.
20 basically user or I mean DAOs, as a early user is a very I think that's quite a lot of feedback. It's gonna be quite a
Yeah,
lot of work for you to manage, I'm sure.
it's 20 communities in general. So right, as I said, we're not we've expanded past DAOs to kind of any sort of online community. So you have communities like, and not they're not working with these communities, but some large ones that you might recognize are people, things like Figma, OpenAI, Unreal Engine. All of these people have Discourse forums. A lot of them have Discords. All of them have Twitter accounts. So working with these larger communities is the ultimate goal. We have right now we have some large communities as well in the beta testing group, but we are working with them to get feedback on the product and try to refine it to obviously solve all these bugs and stuff like that before before expanding out past that test group. We do have I think 100 people or so, or 75 people on the waiting list right now. So we are planning to keep growing that, but obviously we want to roll that out to customers as soon as possible.
Nice. I think whenever I hear like startup saying when you have like a long line of people in the waiting list, I usually see it as like a really good sign of traction because it means like your product is you're probably getting to well, you're probably getting to the product market fit and people want to use it, right? Like they have the need. So I think that's a really good sign.
Thanks. Yeah, that's definitely the goal. I would say that having a waiting list is probably not, it's definitely signs of potential traction, but product market fit, I think we're still a bit off, but we're definitely looking to build for as many people as we can and try to solve the problems that currently exist in communities. I mean, I think we're the right people to do it. So yeah, that's definitely something we strive for.
I see. And what is your potential business model that you think here? Would this be like a SaaS type of format? Software as a service?
Yeah, it'll be a SaaS. So we'll have a variety of tiers. We are planning to roll out a free tier. So for organizations that want to test things, for the smaller communities that might not have a huge amount of volume but can still extract value from the platform, there will be a free tier. There'll be a a mid tier, and then a higher tier for larger communities. This does some of these communities have tens of thousands of messages, which is computationally intensive and expensive to parse through this and go through the extraction pipeline. So yeah, hopefully yeah, we're doing a bit of price discovery right now as well. So there'll be more information on that coming soon, but that's currently the business model.
I see. So my major in college was like economics, mathematics. For me, I love dealing with numbers. And you tell me that you're using the OpenAI's API right now. So I'm quite curious. Like, do you think it'd be possible to make it, economically profitable using that the model in the long run for your, for your tier? I mean, I don't know what price you plan to charge right now, but
Yeah, totally. So like to give you an example, like some of our competitors are charging between $100 per seat to or $50 per seat to 20,000 per year for an organization. So the competitors are quite expensive right now. We don't plan to plan to be able to come in at a very competitive pricing. But yeah, the OpenAI, the API is getting cheaper and cheaper, and it's getting better and better. I don't know if you've kept the recent updates, but the expansion to 120K context window, the price reduction and the token costs has really like I think it's had a very, very positive impact on us. Of course, like these things for extraction pipelines, we, as I said before, like we do want to explore the fine-tuning of our own models, or even the fine-tuning of these other foundational models like Llama and Mistral. in the future, because this will be able to reduce our costs further. But right now, we're pretty satisfied with the cost of these APIs for these extraction pipelines. Obviously, the performance is the best in class. So we're going to stick with this for a bit longer for sure.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Yeah. What are so? I mean, being a very small lean team, what are some of the challenges facing your team at the moment?
Yeah, of course. Some of the challenges facing the team are definitely, we're at a stage right now of growth where we're starting to definitely be at our limits in terms of what's possible in a day. So that's definitely like one of the reasons for expansion. I think like I honestly would prefer to work with a much smaller team and, keeping up with some of the top mentors in this space. That seems to be the advice for to keep a lean team as long as possible. That's what we strive for. It's lower cost, and there's obviously more agreement, and it's easier to align ourselves on the vision of the company. So keeping the team small for now is definitely the goal. But of course, the challenges faced right now is just purely the amount of volume that we have to deal with. We definitely want to introduce people in different areas of expertise, of course, because we have our areas that we are experts in, but we also want to, expand this to bring on more people to give a fresh perspective on things, for example. That's definitely one of the challenges we face is, we've created a environment where we're very aligned inside the company right now, and it's, we're able to move very fast, but we definitely want to, not put our heads down too much and get as much customer feedback as possible, but also introduce someone in the team that can bring a fresh perspective on things.
Yeah, I think for a lot of the smaller companies, it'll be always a challenge, right? Yeah, finding people who are aligned for the mission and who can actually come in and do work from day one, right? Yeah, probably be a
Yeah,
challenge. So
definitely.
are you thinking of like a full remote team?
Ideally, like, so that's another discussion is like the difference between fully remote and in person. Like, I think especially in a small high growth startup, nothing compares to being in person. But my co-founder is in Lisbon with me actually right now, but for part of the time he is different locations. And I think while we work quite well remote, you can't make a comparison. I can understand in a larger company, but in a high growth startup, it's definitely very valuable to have people in person. Yeah, if that answered the question.
Yeah, it does. I'm curious now. So you guys are building kind of a tools or community to help them manage or work better one another. But what tool do you guys use among your team to work with one another?
Yeah, we're huge fans of Notion. Honestly, like Notion is
Ah, okay.
a very, very powerful tool for us right now. Like we have, I have it open on a couple of screens here. It is where we store docs. It's where we store, our CRMs. It's where we have development pipelines as well as our product pipelines. And yeah, we're definitely, I think I've heard at some stage that Notion becomes a little bit too, unstructured for a lot of development teams. So, when we onboard new developers and stuff like that, we probably will switch to Jira. We have, a good amount of experience using Jira and Linear and a bunch of other different workflows. So definitely want to move to something that makes the most sense for the team. So while we're not married to Notion, it's a fantastic tool for what we need right now.
I see. Yeah, it makes sense. What really motivates you every day for the work you're doing here? Because it sounds like there's a lot of work going ahead, right? I mean, there must be something driving inside
That's
you, yeah.
true. Yeah, I'm very, since I so obviously having come from a Web3 background, Web3 naturally is very community oriented. So we participate in a lot of hackathons. We over the years, and also we have been involved in a lot of communities. It's fun. But yeah, I think there's a huge
Oh, it's fun.
potential
It's fun, yeah.
for Web3 communities to have an impact on Web2 communities. So Web3 communities have a lot of things that are quite interesting is they have like a bit more of a governance structure. So community members have a little bit more of a say in what happens in these communities. There is better incentive structures. And I think you're seeing a lot of, I think we will see over the next few years, a lot of communities turn to, or companies turn to curating better online communities in order to grow their product. If you look at companies like Figma or Notion or a variety of these larger companies, they are putting a lot of emphasis on community. And I think it's incredibly powerful for a company. So we're going to see that more and more over the next few years, I think. So one of the things that motivates me is the inherent interest to solve the underlying problems that currently exist in communities. So information overload, missing context, the amount of people that are willing to come in every day and discuss topics and try to better an organization is incredible in Web3. So I think that's one thing that motivates me is how can we essentially build the future generation of communities.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's a very lofty goal. So yeah, hopefully in the future we'll probably see more like, city DAO, networks, state DAO, things like that too. And
For sure.
those that actually function properly as well too. Yeah.
That's the
Nice.
goal.
Okay.
That's
Awesome.
definitely the goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's I think let's go ahead and switch to like general discussion. You can quit the screen sharing here, if you
Absolutely.
want. So let's go ahead and do general discussion about Web3. Two questions I want to ask you about Web3. So for Web3, where do you think like the where is the future of DAO in general? How is DAO gonna evolve in the next few years on in the future?
Yes. I think that DAOs will I think that there needs to be better software for DAOs right now, because I think that a lot of DAOs are following a kind of a still a traditional structure of, the people management. And that's what becomes very important. A lot of these organizations is how well you manage people. I'm a big fan of how we can implement like code as law in as many ways as possible. So, a lot of the workflows in current DAOs are very manual and they require a very centralized group of people to execute on these decisions. So, bringing these organizations on chain and implementing code as law where possible is something that's very interesting to me. I think that DAOs will be used for very specific purposes. I don't think that DAOs will, ever be startups because they just can't move as fast. But I think, we already have a lot of organizations around us that could be very effective as DAOs. So things like governments, things like, well, maybe not governments, but things like HOAs, things like football clubs, local communities have a huge amount to gain by adopting a more DAO-like structure. So implementing more incentives and governance structures around these things can, I think, can help them grow. Because right now they're being, managed by smaller groups of people that, there's no real incentive to participate, stuff like that. So I think that's definitely where I see DAOs being most, prominent once we solve the whole UX issue with Web3. But they definitely have a place in the world for sure.
I think it's interesting point you raised about like homeowner association and then football clubs. Actually, I want to touch a bit more on the football clubs aspect. So I've observed that some football club, famous football clubs in the world, maybe from Italy, from England, whatever, they actually issue their own tokens, right? So how do you think the token play a role in, like maybe growing the football club? And does it help in any way or does it hurt? Like, I just want your take on it.
I mean, like football clubs are a great example. I was actually referencing like more local community football clubs, but like actually larger football clubs are probably a better example. Like you have a a lot of these football clubs are a lot of their revenue comes from, of course, like sponsorships and brand deals, but it also comes from, fans, right? Fans buy tickets to these games, and they have huge support. And without the fans, they would never have the brand deals in the first place. And there's a variety of things that come from this very, very dedicated community that lead to the success of a football club. You can't, these you can't hire more expensive people. You can't increase budgets. You can't do any of this stuff without a larger fan base. Hold on a second. I'm just gonna put this on YouTube because I'm getting a bunch of pings. So yeah, so that's something that's really, really interesting to me is actually creating incentive layers for these communities. I think a lot of people right now will buy tickets to the game, or they'll hold season tickets, or they'll buy merch, or they'll do a variety of actions that benefit ultimately the football club, but they don't really have a stake in the football club, if that makes sense. So they don't really have a they have a community that they're part of, but their value that they bring to these organizations is not really realized in any way. So implementing DAO structures in these larger football clubs or larger communities that are dependent on their communities, or larger companies that are dependent on their communities, is a really interesting concept. So if you're a fan, maybe you attend a game, maybe you get tokens or some sort of a verifiable credential on chain to prove that you were part, or that you attended that game, or that you had certain merchandise. And after a certain while, maybe there is community decision making that gets implemented. So maybe community members can make the decision on what the design of the new football shirt is going to be, or for any of these things. I think by implementing these kind of interesting governance structures, you can even benefit the fans, but also give them a huge amount of more incentive to be part of this club and to be part of a more cohesive community.
Yeah, I think that totally makes sense. Yeah, because I think with the holding token, I guess they can probably vote, right? One thing I forgot to ask is that in DAO, right? How is the decision typically made? Is it also like majority rules? Like if you have 51% vote on a topic, you just that pass and everyone have to abide by, or now how does it work?
I think it's different in a bunch of organizations. I can definitely give you an example of how CDDA operates, and that is someone comes along and they propose an idea. This idea is put on the forum, so similar to the forum that I showed you with OpenAI, CDDA uses it for governance. Once this reaches a certain number of likes, it goes to snapshot, and then this gets voted on. CDDA has implemented quadratic voting, so it means that the token holders essentially have, if you have 64 tokens, your governance vote is 8. So it's the square root of the amount of tokens you hold is your vote weight, or your vote weight towards approval, and then the quorum is measured based off the total number of tokens you have. So this is one way of doing it. There's a bunch of, like, quadratic voting is not always the square root either. There's a bunch of different mechanisms that different organizations use, but that's definitely one of the ones that CDAO uses. It's good because the quadratic voting reduces the centralization of voter power, which is good. Obviously, you have one person, one vote as well, but I do think a mixture between having a incentive based off of the number of, or the amount of stake you have in these organizations, is definitely a good idea paired with one person, one vote. So I think that quadratic voting is definitely a happy medium.
I think the concept of quadratic voting is actually quite interesting. For me, being a mathematics econ major, I think it's more fairer than the 1-1, but I think in some certain cases, right? Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I mean,
Awesome. And
economics is
then
definitely, I think the it's economics is an interesting, like, take on it, because I guess, like, in one person, one vote, it's, yeah, you don't, there's no incentive for someone to have a larger stake or to, participate higher, especially in things like, companies. Of course, you have the upside of companies, which is the stock, but in DAOs, you don't have an expected upside. So, why would people hold more token other than to be able to, more tokens other than to be able to vote, with more weighting? And I think it's definitely interesting to see how a bunch of different mechanisms play out. I don't know what the best one is, but I definitely love looking at how different organizations do this.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think I'm for me as well too. I would love to see some sort of like a chart showing like this many percentage of organization is using quadratic voting, this many is using the majority rules or whatever, one-on-one. Yeah,
Totally.
that'd be
Totally.
interesting to see. Yeah, you mentioned earlier probably about like code as law, right? To what extent can we implement that in like in smart contract? Is everything
Yeah.
implementable as code as law? Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think there's different levels to this. I think there is definitely a barrier between code as law and DAOs that work in the real world. So, of course, CityDAO, you have to purchase land and you have to sign things and you have to do a variety of different actions. So It's a lot more difficult for them to implement code as law into a pipeline like that. Whereas implementing code as law into a pipeline for the governance process is actually quite simple. Right now, the way that it works is someone posts something manually on the form, which is obviously always necessary. But then, there's a group of people that checks and says, okay, well, this is, this has reached a certain number of likes. And then there's some like arbitrary decision as to when to put it up to snapshot. And then once it's reached snapshot, there's like an arbitrary decision as to when to send the money to that person if it's for a grant or something like that. So to give you an example, if someone said, hey, I want to, purchase land, right? And I need $10,000. This would reach a certain number of likes on a forum. And then once it reached those likes on the forum, then a group of people basically say, okay, well, I'm going to post it to Snapshot today or tomorrow or in a week's time. And they post that to Snapshot. And then once it reaches Snapshot, it's like, okay, well, I can wait a day or a week or whatever to actually go and send the funds. And it, in these processes, obviously there's checks that need to be made to make sure that things are, abiding by the law, are legitimate, stuff like that. But in these instances, code as law could definitely be implemented, which is, definitely an area that I'm interested in. The code as law on more real world side of things is a little bit more complex, but I think is definitely possible in certain use cases like the HOA, for example.
Yeah, makes sense. So for each of the vote that they do, does someone have to create a new smart contract? Does someone have to do the coding all over again, or do they just use like a template, or how does that work?
Yeah, so Snapshot is an off-chain governance protocol that allows you to create votes. So you can create proposals on Snapshot, and snapshots have specific strategies associated with them. And the strategies are essentially I think it's a JSON that has the rules for what tokens can vote, and how much weighting those tokens get, and what the contract of the token is. So that's essentially how CityDAO operates. So there's set strategies, which means that the citizen NFT can vote and the founding citizen NFT can vote. And then based off of these strategies, every time someone puts up a proposal, it implements this strategy, and then people can vote on that proposal. So it's a set governance process. So it's all off chain. There's other companies that bring it on chain as well, but for someone like CityDAO, I don't think it depends on how it's implemented, but I think it's something that we'll definitely look into in the future, bringing
I
those on
see.
chain, that is.
Got it. Got it. So I mean, since if it's off-chain, then someone still have to sign the process. Like maybe they have a multi-sig and maybe a board or something, right? So you have to sign to send the fund
Well,
on some
yeah,
private sig.
exactly. That's exactly it. So Aragon has a lot of processes for executing these votes on chain, and then automatically executing like fund transfers, stuff like that. I definitely think that that's something that we can do, but in an instance where something is illegitimate, or it's being sent to some restricted regions. Like, how do you mitigate this? And right now, I'm not sure that automating this whole process is the best idea as a Wyoming LLC. But there definitely is room for improvement.
What let's maybe switch to a general question here. What problems in the world do you think Web3 is suitable for?
What problems? I'm very interested. Of course, we have the fintech side of things. So, like fintech and DeFi, there definitely is a solution that, or sorry, Web3 definitely fits into a solution in that area of things. So, giving power back to people to control their own financial assets, as opposed to having a bank being able to decide when you can and can't withdraw, or how much you can and can't withdraw, or making you go through lofty, extensive processes in order to do so. I definitely think that the Web3 side of this will help immensely, as well as transfers, cross-border transfers. Revolut is definitely at the forefront of this, I think, with payments. But sending money to New Zealand or to Vietnam, for example, for me right now would probably take a couple of days, whereas of course crypto dramatically reduces this. I think that's definitely one area that I definitely believe in a lot. But another area that I'm incredibly interested in is actually the side of identity. So, verifiable credentials, self-sovereign identity. So, the ability for you to prove that, you have enough money, to lease a specific apartment in New York. I know New York has a very funky, system right now for being able to lease apartments, having to prove your financial stability, stuff like that, having to prove that you can afford a specific mortgage or, proving that you have a driver's license or things like this. There's a very interesting area around the ownership of your own data, as well as the zero knowledge way of proving these things. So that's definitely the two of my favorite areas that are associated with Web3.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I share the same, but I do hope that there'll be more potential use case as well as people develop and go along. Yeah, just three more questions from my side here. First one. Yeah. First one is my show signature question as well. How can we onboard like 1 billion people into Web3? What can we do?
Of course. How can we onboard 1 billion people in the Web3? I mean, the obvious question is UX, right? The UX
Yeah.
for Web3 right now is suboptimal. I think by seeing more and more of these consumer applications that actually deliver direct value to the end consumer is definitely going to help. So obviously, excuse me, the abstraction of Web3 and the abstraction of the use of the word Web3 will help. So when it comes to someone that sends money to another person for a payment at dinner, building apps like Revolut that are extremely easy to use and excuse me, that are extremely easy to use and
Yeah.
that people don't even think about the Web3 aspect of things, I think is definitely the at
Yeah.
the forefront for me. So going to your phone and any of these different crypto to fiat rails right now are
Yeah.
cool. I know Sora Card is working on it and Gnosis Pay has one, and I know there's a variety of different platforms that are doing it, but being able to go to an application on your phone and wanting to use it and it being useful without Web3 being mentioned, I think is definitely how I see it progressing.
Yeah, it's true. I think the UX issue is it's a perennial problem. Just talking about like splitting the dinner bill, right? That's a very simple problem. I think the other day, maybe among a bunch of Web3 people, we went to dinner together, right? And then the guy want to pay with credit card, but he want to get the money back through crypto. So the UX in crypto, it's not like optimal, like you said. Yeah, I think I have to what get his address, right? And then make sure it's on the same chain and verify we have enough cash and have enough gas, and yeah, send it to him, making yeah, and then you have to do all the what verification, right? 2FA and make sure that it's actually prove that it's you sending money. And so it's yeah, you're right, it's not optimal compared to Revolut or yeah, PayPay.
There's just definitely regulatory issues with all of this. So like the situation now with the banking license and stuff like that when producing like financial applications is I'm not super familiar with it, but I know that there is definitely restrictions around what can and can't be done. But like the Revolut is a great example of something that just works really well, and that the user experience is really good. And like I don't care if another application comes along, I'm probably going to stick to Revolut unless it's significantly better. So like until Web3, like I know for a fact that Web3 could produce a very similar value proposition to Revolut, definitely being better than the traditional banking applications that we use on a daily. I think it'll be very hard to compete with until people start to see the true value of why Web3 is important. Revolut offers the best in class, transfers, savings, all of these different things, payments. Like for the average everyday person, unless like you have a Web3 application which delivers the exact same UX, people aren't going to use it. People don't care enough about financial sovereignty and these things as much as a lot of Web3 people do, partially because they don't understand the problem as much, or we haven't actually experienced it yet. Obviously there was the Silicon Valley Bank stuff that happened months ago, and there's been a few other instances in history where we've had issues with these banking things, but until it really comes and shocks people. I don't think there's going to be anything, that will massively incentivize people to change.
I completely agree. I think being traveled to a lot of different countries, including many developing countries, I've seen that there's a higher accepted rate in like developing countries because if a country experiences high inflation, right, they basically have to adopt something that's more stable so that their earning do not go down with time, right? Yeah, maybe Argentina is a great example. Turkey recently also been there.
You have a lot of South American countries, Brazil, Argentina, all of these countries that have a very unstable economy. You have Turkey, for example. The Turkish lira has, definitely gone through a rough 16 months. And a variety of other countries that are in, unstable economic conditions. And like my example is quite privileged that we're in Europe, or that I'm in Europe, and I have access to something like Revolut. But in a lot of instances, Revolut may not support these countries, or people may not have access to, the phones that exist to run this software. So I definitely think that there is like, I agree with you. There's a very, very big potential for the use of crypto in these like developing economies for sure.
All right. To close out the show, I would like to ask, do you have any advice for people who want to build their own Web3 company or building their own company in general?
Yeah, of course. I'm quite a fan. I think it was Sam Altman that said this. But there is no one best path or one like size fits all. I think for creating these things, especially in Web3, a lot of Web3 companies have gone completely against the grain of one of my favorite advice platforms or content, which is the YC Startup Guide or Startup School. I would definitely say that take all the advice you hear with a pinch of salt. But there is definitely something to be said about talking to users and trying to understand who you are building for at a very, very deep level, and really understanding the problem that you're trying to solve. That's kind of where we've kind of ended up, is that we had problems trying to describe what we were trying to build and trying to understand the people we were building for until now. So that's definitely some advice I would give, but I would also say take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, because I think the world is just changing so fast, even technology, every new things, right? Yeah, so always keep an open mind, try out new things completely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Where can people follow you? Feel free to share your social media handles, any personal website. I'll make sure you include in the show notes later on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess check out Missio, missio.ai. Check out our documentation. We'll have a production version coming very, very soon. Feel free to follow us on Twitter. I think the handle is missio_AI. And of course, my own one is lions_800.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time today. Oisin, it's been an awesome chat. It's been very fun.
Cool, man. I appreciate your time. We'll chat offline. See you later.
Yeah, awesome. And we are back to my studio. I hope that after watching this 12th episode, you'll have a better understanding about DAOs, decentralized autonomous organization, how they function, and how the tools that Missio.ai are building are helping communities achieve their vision more effectively. I think there's a lot of similarities between the Web2 world of corporation and nonprofit organization and Web3 DAOs. For the next episode, we'll be venturing into the financial world. We'll be talking to LaShawn, who is the founder and CEO of a micro private equity firm based in the USA. It's a conversation you don't want to miss. If you enjoyed this 12th episode of Colors of Web3 and Entrepreneurship, please give a like and subscribe, because it would mean a lot to me. Thank you for watching or listening, or wherever you are, and see you next time.